The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweis, and this is the Stoic Jew Podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. One of the things I enjoy about this podcast is that I can explore ideas that happen to be on my mind, even if they are not related to anything in the Parsha or in any of the shiurim I'm giving. And what has been on my mind lately? OpenAI, the artificial intelligence program software, I don't know what to call it exactly, and specifically GPT-3, which is the current version from what I understand. So I'll include the link in the show notes, but this is a fun and scary tool that is the most advanced AI that I've seen. And you could basically have a conversation with it. You know, you could basically ask it questions and it'll give you answers. In some cases, then the answers are extremely impressive. In other cases, they are comically false or ridiculous. But it's been quite an interesting journey to experiment with this thing and to think about the implications. And I wanted to, since I only really started playing with this thing a couple days ago, I wanted to record my initial thoughts and then just see where this goes in terms of Stoicism and Judaism. So I thought it'd be appropriate also to give you an idea about what this is like, to open up with a conversation with OpenAI. So I began by asking OpenAI, what did Marcus Aurelius believe about the soul? The response I got was, Marcus Aurelius was a Stoic philosopher, and as such, he believed that the soul was a rational and divine essence that is inherent in all human beings. He believed that the soul was immortal and that it was the source of a person's moral character. Aurelius believed that the soul was the guiding force behind a person's actions and that it could be cultivated and nurtured in order to live a virtuous and fulfilling life. He also believed that the soul was connected to the universe as a whole and that it was capable of attaining wisdom and understanding through contemplation and self-reflection. So then I followed that up by asking, did he believe that the soul was physical or non-physical? Because this is really one of the reasons I'm interested in this. I guess I'm not going to get into it right now. One of the reasons I'm interested in this AI thing is because it does get down to the questions of what we mean by thinking, what we mean by the soul, what aspects of thinking are material, what aspects are immaterial, non-physical. So I asked, did he believe that the soul was physical or non-physical? The answer that OpenAI gave me is, Aurelius, as a Stoic philosopher, likely believed that the soul was a non-physical entity. Stoicism, as a philosophical tradition, emphasizes the concept of the soul as a rational and divine essence that is separate from the physical body. In Stoicism, the soul is seen as the source of a person's moral character and their ability to reason, and it is believed to be immortal and unchanging. Therefore, it is likely that Aurelius believed that the soul was a non-physical entity that existed independently of the physical body. Okay, and the last question I asked it was, would Marcus Aurelius believe in the concept of the soul taught by Judaism? Now, whenever you ask AI a question about what would a certain thinker say, they always give an excuse. It'll give an excuse or a disclaimer that it's impossible to know what he would actually say. So after the disclaimer, it responded by saying, it is possible that Aurelius may have found some common ground with the Jewish concept of the soul, as both traditions place a strong emphasis on the importance of the soul as a source of a person's moral character and their ability to reason. Additionally, both Stoicism and Judaism view the soul as being immortal and as having a profound connection to the universe as a whole. It is also worth noting that Aurelius was known to have a deep interest in the philosophy and religion of other cultures, so it is possible that he may have been open to the idea of the soul as taught in Judaism. Okay, so that's what AI said. Let's actually look at the actual sources in Marcus Aurelius and Judaism and see how it lines up. So I don't want to go into a whole discourse on what Stoicism and Judaism believe about the soul. I just want to give you a little sampling so that I can then reflect upon that. So Marcus Aurelius in Meditations Book 2, Chapter 2 says, this, whatever it is that I am, is flesh and vital spirit and governing self. Okay, so there's three parts. He's saying flesh, vital spirit, and governing self. Disdain the flesh. Blood and bones and network, a twisted skein of nerves, veins, and arteries. Consider also what the vital spirit is, a current of air, not even continuously the same, but every hour being expelled and sucked in again. There is then a third part, the governing self. Put away your books and be distracted no longer, they are not your portion. Okay, so he's recognizing that the flesh is physical, clearly. the vital spirit, which means the thing that gives you biological life, is also physical in that it's air. But then there's the governing self, which is not physical. Okay, and he elaborates on this later on in the chapter, or in the book, in chapter 17. He says, of man's life, his time is a point, his existence is a flux, his sensation clouded, his body's entire composition corruptible, his vital spirit an eddy of breath, his fortune hard to predict, his fame uncertain. Briefly, all the things of the body, a river. All the things of the spirit, dream and delirium. His life, a warfare and a sojourn in a strange land. His afterfame, oblivion. What then can be his escort through life? One thing and one thing only, philosophy. And this is to keep the spirit within him unwronged and unscathed, master of pains and pleasures, doing nothing at random, nothing falsely and with pretense, needing no other to do aught or to leave aught undone, and moreover, accepting what befalls it, that is, what is assigned to it as coming from that other world from which it itself came. So that is a little bit more explicit here, that the spirit is non-physical, and that the role of the spirit is to accept whatever befalls it and to live in harmony with nature, and as being dictated by the world, by God's world, from whence the spirit came. Okay, one more reading. Again, we're not going into this in depth here. He says in book 3, chapter 16, body, vital spirit, mind. Again, that same threefold division. To the body belong sense perceptions, to the vital spirit, impulses, to the mind, principles. To be impressed by images. Now, he's using impressed not here as like, oh, I'm impressed by your accomplishments. He means to receive impressions by images belongs also to the beasts of the field. To be pulled by the strings of desire belongs to wild beasts and to men who sin against nature, to a Phalaris or to a Nero. To have the mind as guide to what appear to be duties belongs also to men who do not believe in God, who betray their own country, who do anything and everything once they have locked their doors. If then all else is common to you with those whom I have mentioned, it remains the peculiar mark of the good man to love and welcome what befalls him and what the thread of fate spins for him, and not to soil the divine element seated within his breast, nor to disquiet it with a mob of imaginations, but to preserve it and to obey it, following God in an orderly manner, uttering no word contrary to truth, doing no act contrary to justice. And if all men disbelieve that he lives simply, modestly, and contentedly, he is not angry with any of them, nor diverted from the road that leads to the goal of his life, at which he must arrive, pure, peaceful, ready to depart without compulsion, perfectly reconciled to his lot. So this builds off of what he said before, that the mind is capable of rising above, you know, mind over matter, rising above the desires and impulses of the body and of the vital spirit. And this could be corrupted if you're a evil man where you are ruled by your bodily passions. But if you are a good man, you can transcend those bodily passions and live in line with the will of God, which is of which your soul, so to speak, resembles in that it's not physical and not from the physical world. Okay. All right. So that's a brief sketch of Stoicism's, or of Marcus Aurelius's view of the soul. Now let's switch to Judaism. Obviously, I'm not going to go into a whole discourse on what Judaism's view of the soul is, but whenever I have to present what Judaism's view of the soul is, then I prefer to read from the Sforno, because Sforno does such a good job. And I know there's differences between different views of the soul, but there's a common core that everyone agrees with, that the soul is the part of you that can, or that I should say all the Rishonim agree with, that the medieval authorities, that the soul is the part of you that thinks and that could seek knowledge for its own sake. But I want to read to you Sforno's explanation of this. So first, actually, let's read the Psukim, the verses in the Torah, in Bereishis Aleph, Chaf Vav, and Chaf Zayin, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Vayomer Elohim, and God said, Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu, let us make man in our form like our likeness. V'yudu b'tgas hayam uv'uf hashemayim uv'abahim uv'chol ha'arts uv'chol ha'remes ha'remes al ha'arts. And he will rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the heaven and the wild animal, the domesticated animals, and over all the earth and over everything that moves upon the earth. V'yivra Elokim asa Adam b'tzalmo b'tzalim Elokim bara oso zachar nekeva bara osam. And God created the man in his form. In the form of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. And I should say, I said the form of God. The word used there is Elohim, or if used in the broader sense, Elohim, which is a deliberately ambiguous or multi-use term, a homonym, which can mean either God, angels, or judges. Okay, and that's going to be important in the Sforno's explanation. So in the interest of time, because I actually have to leave soon to teach my Mishle class in Yeshiva, I'm going to actually read, I don't usually like doing this, I'm going to read from someone else's English translation of the Sforno, namely the Rabbi Rafael Pelkovitz English translation. am I going to do this? No, I'm gonna. Okay, I'm gonna read. Yeah, I'll read it in this form my own translation. Never mind, scratch that. Okay, so Bitsalmenu, in our okay. So first of all, he says V'yomer Elokim Naaseh. So let us make. So what is the us? That's the obvious question here. So he says Nasan Az Koch BaPamalia Shalo LaHashpia Esetzelim Benosei Hamuchenlo. God endowed the heavenly retinue, the heavenly host, the angels, with a power to bestow the tselem, to bestow the form of God, or whatever he's going to define into the medium that had been prepared for it. Okay. Now, what is that medium? He says Adam. So Naase Adam b'samin kinmusein. Now we usually translate this as "Let us make man in our form," but he's saying "Let us make that Adam." He says Adam min mimine nefesh chaya shiatzarti shishmo Adam. That species of the species of wild animals which I formed, whose name is man. Okay, kamro vayhi Adam lenefesh chaya naasehu b'tsalmenu. Let us make that creature, man, Bitsalmenu, in our form. Now, without going too far astray, this is an interesting thing that Sforno is explaining, that basically man took an animal, which was called Adam, that he had created earlier on the sixth day of creation, and he gave the angels the ability to, the capacity to endow that man with Tzelem Elokim. Now, Sforno obviously was way before, or was hundreds of years before Darwin, before evolution, and I'm not trying to claim that Sforno somehow anticipated evolution. I'm just saying that the way he read the text of the Torah is that God took a brute creature and then allowed, and then enabled it to develop Tzelem Elokim, to develop intellect. Okay, so it happens to harmonize very well with evolution, even though he's not exactly like anticipating the entire theory. Okay, now here comes the key part. Bitsalmenu, let us make man in our form. So what does it mean to be in the form of God? Obviously, God doesn't have a physical form. Shehu etzem nitzchi v'sichli, an essence which is eternal and rational. Uvzeh pasach kel yisbarach, pasach b'toraso liknos yediyah ba'atzamim hanivdalim b'yediyas nafshenu. And through this statement, God opened an opportunity or a path in his Torah for man to acquire knowledge of forms that are separate from matter through the knowledge of our souls. Okay, that's a separate thing. Okay, so the essence, what we're getting here is Tzalmenu, Tzalm Elokim, is an essence that is eternal and rational. And then Kidmusenu, like our likeness, b'inin hamasios, in regards to actions. Shiyidme bam ktsas lepamayoshamala, that man resembles somewhat the heavenly retinue, angels, but tzad ma shein polim b'yidiyah v'hakara, in the sense that man acts with knowledge and recognition. Okay, so angels are pure intellects, and they act with knowledge and recognition, and man resembles them because he also can act with intellect and recognition. Amnam p'ulasam hi bilti b'chiri is. However, their actions, the actions of the angels, are not free. They're not through free will, because they're pure intellects. U'bezeh lo yidmeh lahem ha'adam. And in that sense, man is not similar to them. Okay, so man is partially similar to the angels and partially not. Similar in the sense that he acts with knowledge, dissimilar in the fact that man acts with free will. U'v'ketzas yidmeh ha'adam lekel yisbarach. And in a certain sense, man is similar to God, blessed is he, in that, I just lost my place. Oh yeah, ha'poel b'b'chira, who acts with free will. Okay, amnam, however, B'chiras ha'kel yisbarach hi la'olam l'tov. God's free will is always for good. V'lo kein ha'b'chira ha'enushis. And man's free will is not always for good. V'imze hinei ha'elokis al ofen nechbad me'od yosar min ha'b'chira ha'enushis. So therefore, God's choice, God's free will, is on a higher level than man's. L'chein amar, and that's why it says, ki demusenu, like our likeness, k'mo demusenu, which means like our likeness, lo bidmusenu be'emes, not in our likeness in truth. Okay, so let me summarize this for a second. So the Torah describes man's essence as being bitsalmenu kidmusenu. According to Sforno, bitsalmenu, the tselem Elohim or Elohim, is a rational, eternal essence. Okay, that's the soul. And kidmusenu, like our likeness, means that man has free will, which is somewhat similar to the... So man's actions are somewhat similar to the angels in that he acts with knowledge and recognition, but dissimilar in that man acts with free will, whereas angels don't. And then he says that man's actions are somewhat similar to God because God acts with free will, but man's free will is a result of the fact that he has an immaterial intellect and a physical body and desires, whereas and therefore man can choose evil, whereas God can only choose good. Okay, one more. Okay, you'll see where I'm going with this in a little while. Okay, I know this kind of turned into a shear on the soul. Okay, but that's not where I'm going, surprisingly. So then on Pasuk 27, he says, "B'tel Melukim." He says, "Hine milas Elohim altzad ha'hidamus te'amer al kol etzem sichli befoal shalim nivdal mechomer uvezehu nitzchi behechreach." So he says the word Elohim is used by way of comparison or analogy on anything which is an essence, which is rational and actual, complete, separate from matter, and in this sense, it will be eternal of necessity. That's why we use the term Elohim about God and Elohim about angels, because they are intellects which are separate from matter that are eternal. And we also call judges Elohim. Why? Based on the rational element which is proper to them. Amnam, however, bios ki asechel hanushi aval pi shepeulas haskalaso hi bilti shum kli chomri. Okay, this is getting to a more important part here for our purposes. The human intellect, even though the action of its cognition is without any material vessel, v'tis pashet al bilti muchash, and it can extend to things that are not sensory. In other words, the intellect, and obviously we have a brain, and the brain is physical, but the intellect is not physical, and it can relate to non-physical concepts, okay? As Mortimer J. Adler says, when he wants to capture the distinction between the brain and the intellect, he says, we can't think without our brain, but we don't think with it either, meaning that the brain is a necessary but not sufficient cause for thinking. Thinking is really done through the immaterial intellect, and the organ of the brain plays some role, but it's not, that's not what's doing the thinking. Okay, Sforna would agree with that. So he says, okay, Valkatas Asidos, and the mind can also relate to certain things in the future. That's a reference to prophecy. Veloi Chalish Baharboso Pulos Haskalaso. And the intellect does not become weakened through extensive use of its cognition. Veloba Ace Zinknasaguf, nor does it become weak when the body gets old. Val Yosef elements, but it gets stronger. Umikol Ela Hisbarshu Nivdel Mechomer Blisafik. And from all of this, it is clear that the intellect is not physical without a doubt. So in other words, he's saying physical things wear out with use, and in your body, the older you get, then the weaker your physical capacities get. But the intellect does not wear out with use. And the older you get, then the stronger it gets. Again, obviously, that's not including brain diseases, which can impair your ability to use your intellect. So he's saying that's an indication that the intellect is not physical. All right. So then he says, Umikol Ela Hisbarshu Nivdal Mechomer Belisafik. From all of this, it's clear that the intellect is without a doubt non-physical. Because the opposite of these things happen to bodily faculties which are physical. Nevertheless, kodim shis bonin bios oz mishulal mikol shlemus asher huchan lo, lo ikar Elohim. But it's proper for you to understand bioso oz mishulal mikol shlemus, when the intellect is not perfected in man, you don't call it Elohim. Of all, yikar etzelem Elohim. It's called the form or image of Elohim, bilvad, alone. Ad sheikne shlemus, until it acquires perfection, bifrat b'chochma asher bat yikne avas hakel v'yiraso, especially with the wisdom through which it acquires love of God and fear of God, ki az yiyeh etzem sichli b'foal shalem nivdel mechomer. Then it will be an essence that is intellectual, actual, perfect, and separate from matter. And then that will necessitate that it be eternal after the body. Since it is within man's choice to acquire this perfection through striving to contemplate the wisdom which was mentioned, then it's clear then that if man withholds himself from this involvement, then his rational faculty will remain in a state of potentiality, mishulal mikol shlemus b'fo'al, absent or void of all actual perfection, kamoshi haya b'tchila, like it was in the beginning, v'yale batohu v'yovad, and then it will just go into nothingness and be destroyed. Kamro, as it says in Tehillim 49:21, adam bikar b'v'lo yavin nimshal gabhemos nidmu. Man in his glory who doesn't understand is compared to the silent animals. V'es kol ele hora hakel yisbarach b'shtei milos b'amro b'tzelem elokim. All of this God indicated through two words, tzelem elokim. Okay, so beautiful discourse on the soul from the Sforno. The essence of this that we get from here is that what it means to be human is to have an intellect which is rational and non-physical, separate from matter, and to be able to act with free choice, which is somewhat similar to God in that it's free and but not similar to God in that it can choose bad, and somewhat similar to the angels in that it can act with knowledge, but not similar to the angels in that the angels are not free. Okay, and to be, when God created man as a tzelem Elohim, an image of the divine, because that's the reference in the state of the potential. But when you actualize this by acquiring chachma, wisdom, and avas Hashem and yiras Hashem, love of God and fear of God, so then you actualize the truly unique part of you, and then you could be called Elohim. Then your soul could be called a truly Elohim in the same way that angels are, which is a rational essence. Okay. Whew. All right. That was a lot longer than I thought. All right. So why am I bringing all this up? Because I think that it is clear that, that, you know, when you're reading both Marcus Aurelius and the Torah and Sforno's explanation, you end up having this focus on the question of what am I? What is the essence of me? You know, I am not my body. I am not the life force within me. And that's what you get when you're reading Marcus Aurelius. And then with Sforno, you see that I am not the animalistic part of me. The real me is the part that so to speak, resembles God and the angels, which is the soul. And one of the things I'm finding here that is interesting is when as we explore this AI territory, it really is getting to this question of what aspects of my thinking are coming from my soul and what aspects of thinking really are me. You know, if I can, I mean, that was the, that is the Turing test, named after Alan Turing, which would be the test to determine whether you've truly created artificial intelligence by whether a person can have a conversation with a machine, and a conversation with a human, not knowing what either, not knowing who they're talking to, and only have a 50-50 chance of guessing which is which. In other words, when talking to an artificial intelligence would be indistinguishable from talking to a human being. That's the Turing test, which I found out this morning, by the way, was really proposed by Descartes, much, much earlier than Turing did. But anyway, that's a side point. So this is bringing up questions about what aspects of ourselves really are the self. And I think that sometimes a person in dealing with questions like that can be predisposed to reject the implications simply because they don't want to relinquish any personal identity, or they don't want to view a part of themselves as, or they don't want to take a part of themselves that they see as themselves and realize it's not really essentially part of themselves. An example of this is the Rambam maintains that Olam Haba, that the world to come, is not physical. So I think when I've taught high school before, I think there are a lot of students who believe that when they go to Olam Haba, that it's going to be them with their, you know, either with their body or their emotions, their personality, in existence in Olam Haba. And when I tell them that, at least according to the Rambam, your personality is really from your psyche, which is a physical faculty, which is part of your physicality, and that's not really you, that's not the real you, there's a certain disillusionment or shock that they have, that they view their personality as part of themselves, and it's really not, according to Judaism. And I think there's a certain thing that is going on here as well, is that we view, let's say, like, you know, you can use AI, you can use this AI chatbot to write poetry, and you could use DALL-E to make images. And I think a lot of people do view man's creativity and artistic capacity as something that's uniquely human, but we're seeing through this, evidently, an AI can do things like that and can have quote-unquote creative thinking that, even if it's not the same in nature, it produces the same or more impressive results. And I think that's it's a letdown for certain people. If they view that as something that's uniquely them, it's like they're realizing that this is not really me, or this is not really essentially a part of me. So I think my prediction is what's going to happen. I mean, obviously you can't predict the particulars, but what's going to happen is the more advanced AI gets, then the more it's going to force us to recognize what really is truly human. Like the ability to write a poem or to answer questions is not necessarily what makes us human. And I think this is actually going to be good for us in the sense that it is going to help us to realize what parts of ourselves truly are human. And there is going to be a certain letdown or pain in coming to terms with the fact that things that I thought are unique about myself really aren't unique or aren't really uniquely human. But the flip side of that is that you will have a greater appreciation and cherishing of what actually is human. Now, I know that if there's anyone who's a real AI devotee, I don't know what you call these people, singularity people, do we still call them that? Then you might, the extreme position will say, oh, well, we're going to find out that there is nothing unique about human intellect. And we'll find out that AI can completely replicate or simulate or surpass human intellect. I know that's a position that people hold. That's obviously not the position that the Torah holds. And so we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But for now, I'm an Orthodox Jew who believes in Torah, and I maintain that there is something unique and immaterial about the human intellect, which no matter how advanced computers get, then you'll not be able to replicate that. So I'm going to stick with that position for the time being. But look, we'll find out. Okay, that is it for today's episode, and I thought it'd be a good idea to conclude the episode by having GPT-3 write my sign-off. So here's the sign-off that it wrote for me. Thank you for listening, reading, and watching. Your support means the world to me. If you enjoy my content and would like to support my work, please visit my Patreon page at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweis. You can also make a contribution to the Rabbi Schneeweis Torah Content Fund using Venmo at Matt-Schneeweis. Or dash Schneeweis, I always forget what it is, Zelle or PayPal at matchschneeweis@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support. Wishing you all the best.